Midlands today with O'Brien's Hyundai Mullingar. The all-new Ioniq 5. Discover the electric life. Hyundai. On to better. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. How was your weekend? A lot of very disturbing news for housing today. First of all, you've that house fire in Tullamore. One family losing everything but the shirt on their backs, and we need to help them. But also, we're hearing of tented accommodation in Athlone in 2022. Tented. More on that a little later. Here's one for you. Could be a Christmas stocking filler. Alpaca poo balls. These are homemade, natural alpaca poo balls. Yes, they're squashed into ball shapes and they will be dried out and then ready to burn and will make extremely low carbon fireballs that apparently produce fantastic heat from your fireplace or act as great natural fertilizer for your plants. And when dry, it emits no smell whatsoever. So claims Alan McIntyre of Hilltop Farm Alpacas. Well done, Alan. Waste not, want not. That's the circular economy right there. When you call 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Well, as I said, coming up today, 140 asylum seekers apparently living in tented accommodation in Athlone. How has that happened? The Midland Simon community updates you on its latest report for the region. Two Offaly men opened their second bar in New York this week, a success story from 20 past 10, and much more besides. Now, what's on the front pages today? Well, we'll start with the Irish Times, which looks at what was mainly a Green Party promise in the programme for government, that direct provision would end, and they had set a target of 2024 by which this should happen. And according to the head of an advisory group, it is not going to be achieved. The other story on the front of the Irish Times, how China is warning us that if we ban Huawei, which is one of its major telecom companies, from tendering for projects here, then it will harm economic ties between Ireland and China. Now, Huawei has been singled out by the United States. And if they have a major telecoms project, if they want transmitters installed, well, they're not going to allow Huawei to tender for it. Ireland has prepared similar restrictions, but it doesn't name any companies in particular. But the Chinese embassy has spotted this. They feel it's aimed at them and at Huawei in particular. And so they want Ireland to reverse tack on this rather quickly. Anyway, that's on the front of the Irish Times. What have we got? Excuse me. What have we got elsewhere? I'm a celeb, now get me out of politics. Matt Hancock in the UK has taken quite a lot of heat for, well, as a sitting MP, making his way into the jungle, starring on a TV series, rather than serving his constituents, so his critics would say. Anyway, he has helped his profile no end, and now he wants out of the jungle. Fair play to him. Parties reject need for armed Gardaí. This is the main story on the Irish Examiner. Mr. Varadkar, Leo Varadkar at the weekend, was said if he was approached by the Garda Commissioner to arm the force, he would say absolutely yes. However, spokespersons for Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Green Party leader Eamon Ryan have extolled the virtues of a mainly unarmed force in the Irish Examiner this morning, and they say the government is committed to ongoing reform of policing, such as the commission on the Future of Policing report, which did not recommend arming the Gorthy. Do you have a firm view on this? Should the Gorthy have what they have in other jurisdictions? Sidearms? The armed support unit is up and running, can be called in if there is a major incident, but rank and file Gorthy still don't have deadly force to deploy. And is that something you're comfortable with? Now, Mary Lou MacDonald is denying allegations that were made and heard during the special criminal court proceedings last week, where Jerry the Monk Hutch is on trial for the murder of David Byrne at the Regency Hotel 6 years ago. And it was suggested by former Sinn Féin councillor Jonathan Dowdle in secret recordings that Sinn Féin has used the Hutch family for money and for votes. Now, Ms. MacDonald rejects this. She was speaking on the BBC yesterday and said, "That is absolutely not true. Let me further say the case is ongoing in Dublin. It is the result of incredible sterling work by the Gorthy over many years. But let me tell you and repeat again for the avoidance of any doubt, I have stood resolutely on the side of the community and against exactly the type of individuals who find themselves now in the courts on these charges my entire life. And any suggestion that there has been anything improper is entirely wrong." Unionists are not accepting her word. Ulster Unionist leader Doug Beattie wants a cross-border police inquiry after the allegations came to light. Likewise, the DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson, he wants to meet with the chief of the PSNI, Simon Byrne, about these allegations. And you can expect politicians to make politics of this, naturally enough, because based on the latest Red Sea opinion poll in the Business Post, Sinn Féin is on 31% in the Republic, compared with Fine Gael on 24%. Mind you, Sinn Féin is down 4 in that survey, Fine Gael climbing 3 points. Now, let's get to the celeb side of the news. Amy Huberman and Brian O'Driscoll, the power couple of Irish media, as they're called. She splutters and laughs at the mere suggestion in the Irish Times today, and she says, "I spend half the day going, oh God, I don't want to do anything, and just lying on the couch. There's no power involved in that." That's kind of comforting, actually, that even the most glamorous couples in the country have their lazy Sundays just like the rest of us. I got up at 12 yesterday. Now, that's Budgie's fault. Hello, Liam Judge, who called over with a bottle of Tullamore Dew on Saturday night. Let's not go there. I saw something very, very interesting. Yes, Krista Berg's house is for sale. If you fancy a rather palatial property, and that's a much cliched term, but this extends to 25,500 square feet. Yes, it's hotel size. And if you happen to have 9.85 million euro, you can have this property in Enniskerry, where Rosanna Davison, former Miss World, grew up, her childhood pad. And it was built in 1815. He's been living there since 1996 and spent 7 years renovating it. How do you spend 7 years doing up a house? Anyway, if it's going to be 25,500 square feet, it probably takes that long. There's an indoor pool, there's a home cinema, there's a games room. Naturally, being Krista Berg, there's a professional music studio. That'll be bought and turned into a hotel. At that size, why would you want a home that was 25,000 square feet? Unless you really didn't want to meet your family, because you could go from one end of the day quite comfortably, not seeing or hearing a sight or sound of them. Ireland is building too many big homes. Well, yeah. After that last story, you might be inclined to agree with the Irish Green Building Council. Yes, there is an Irish Green Building Council. I only discovered that today when I opened the Irish Times. So they are looking at the makeup of different homes and how energy efficient they are. And they've concluded that the most carbon efficient homes are either terraced properties or apartments. But the one-off house is the least efficient. And so they want planners to encourage more terraced homes, semi-detached homes at the very least, rather than oversized detached buildings. Well and good when you're perhaps sitting in Dublin looking out at just a concrete jungle, but in the countryside, if you grew up in a rural area and you want to live next door to your parents, well, you're not going to build onto their house, are you? You're probably going to build your own. So there's a little bit of unrealism there, if you ask me. Now, elsewhere, this is a woman who is determined to play for her team. Katrina McConnell helped her side to the All-Ireland Senior Club Championship Final at the weekend, just hours after she got married. She had planned her wedding for more than a year and said it would only be my luck that the match would land on the same weekend. And so she got taken by helicopter from her wedding reception at the Slieve Russell. And the champagne was flowing and so on and so forth. Anyway, she made her way to the club ground via the helicopter and she helped her side to a scoreline of 1-11 to 7 points against Dublin club Kilmacud. And her husband was very, very proud of her. I'm sure he was. And then topped off the weekend after the wedding. That's a bit of an interruption in the plans. One or two more. Pope Francis is praying for peace and he hopes Ukraine will be far-sighted in achieving a ceasefire. He has called on God to hurry up and end the war and released an open letter yesterday directed at the people of Ukraine, saying on them lies the duty to govern the country in tragic times and to make far-sighted decisions for peace and to develop the economy during the destruction of such vital infrastructure. The article in the Irish Independent doesn't say if he directed any comments towards Russia. Presumably he must have, since it was Vladimir Putin who instigated the whole thing. There's a very racy article in the Irish Independent about the birds and the bees. And if you think human females have borne the brunt of patriarchy and sexism over the centuries and millennia, well, the animal kingdom endures it too. And there's a new book by a zoologist, Lucy Cook, and it's called Bitch. Yes, Bitch. And it shows how science was skewed for centuries by men. And she takes you through everything from the sexual cannibalism of lady spiders. You could come up with a book on that. 50 Ways to Eat Your Lover, maybe. How lady lemurs run the show. And how birds, monkeys and lions are all rampantly promiscuous. There. Fascinating stuff. Now, on serious business, a GoFundMe campaign is now up and running in the Tullamore area for a local family who have lost absolutely everything bar the shirt on their back in a horrific house fire. Now, the one saving grace is that everybody is safe and well and there is only material damage, thank God. But they will be homeless this Christmas and already, as of just going on air, €9,000 had been raised for them by the local community here in the Midlands. So we'll be giving you more information about what happened. And if you want to contribute, the GoFundMe link is on Midlands103.com. But they had set up a goal of €10,000. They are about to cross that threshold today in less than 24 hours after they set it up. So a huge well done to those who are supporting them. Well, some Gardaí are not even allowed to turn on the blue light, and yet they are considered as qualified to use guns. One caller not supporting what Leo Varadkar said over the weekend. On that issue of blue lights, by the way, the Portlaoise petrolhead, our resident motoring guru, Bob Flavin, shared this video on TikTok yesterday. Have you ever had an experience like this?
Tonight in a motor with a fake police officer. Let me set the scene a tiny bit. We're coming back down from Dublin on the M1 heading towards the M50. So heading back towards Dublin from Belfast. And I was overtaking a car. So it was a car in front of a car and they were all hugging the kind of overtaking it. Eventually, the first car pulled in and the second car pulled in. But guess what he did then? He put on this little blue light in the front of his car. So anyway, this blue light came on behind me and I thought, okay, well, that must be something wrong here. So I pulled over to the left-hand side of the road. But then I realized there was a fake blue light. A blue flashing light was on behind me and then he turned it off. So I slowed down, let him overtake me a little bit so I could get a like of the license plate. So I took a photograph of your license plate. And then I called the real guards to check you out. So I gave them your reg number, which is 12DL, and I'll hide the rest of it. But you're a silver Ford Focus, so I shared the information with the guards. But I'd love to get in touch with me. Tell me what you thought was going to happen when you turned on the blue light behind me. What do you think I was going to do? Just obey?
So, have you encountered the fake blue light? And if so, how did you react? 083 30 10 103 on text and on WhatsApp. Next, 140 people are living in tents in Athlone. You're going to hear why and how this has come about. On the subject of people impersonating the Gardaí, the Laois Offaly Division has issued the following warning, and it wants you to have a conversation with family, friends and neighbours, particularly if they may be more vulnerable. The Gardaí are aware, they say, of an increase in incidents of people impersonating Gardaí. This behaviour involves con men requesting to check cash held by an injured party as a result of a counterfeit cash circulating in the area. The con men have suggested they need to check the security of your house due to an increase in burglaries in the area. Again, you're assuming it's a Gardaí. They present at your door, they look very legitimate. But the Gardaí say in this statement, they will not cold call to a house. They will not request to see cash. They will not ask to inspect the security of your house. And you are reminded that any Gardaí who should call to your door will have identification. So if you have concerns, then call the Gardaí, the real Gardaí, on the local numbers or indeed on the 999 line, and do not answer the door, even if the person purports to be a Gardaí. Genuine Gardaí, they say, will always provide details allowing you to confirm their identity with the local station. A genuine Gardaí will be patient with you while you make that call. So beware. That's the best you can do. Be as vigilant as you can. Now, with the winter closing in, over 140 people are living in tents in the Athlone area. The Department of Equality and Integration has confirmed in a statement 146 residents of the Lissy Woolen Direct Provision Centre remain in tented accommodation. 20 international protection applicants who had been residing there have been moved to alternative accommodation. Now, let's find out more of the circumstances of this. Gerry Callaghan is the chair of New Horizon, which is an organisation that has, he says, a long and good relationship with staff and residents in Athlone. Gerry, thank you for taking our call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us, first of all, a little bit more about New Horizon. What do you do?
We're a frontline refugee support organisation which has been for over 20 years been helping people who are in the direct provision system in Ireland with information, social activities, sporting activities and many other things.
And over the two decades you've been involved, have you seen people placed in tented accommodation before?
No, this is the first time ever.
And when did it happen?
We found out that it was going to happen in early September. The tented accommodation was erected towards late September and the people moved in at that stage.
Can you describe it for us? Are we talking in small individual tents or larger, almost marquee size units?
They're larger marquee size units, and there are three large sleeping areas which are divided into about four person rooms, with canvas divides between them, the rooms.
Okay, now I'm mindful last night it was 4 or 5 degrees in many parts of the Midlands. What sort of heat retention would these facilities have?
Very, very little heat retention. They heat up very, very quickly. They cool down even more quickly. The heating is by means of oil-fired burners, which are mounted outside, and the hot air is then ducted in to the tents. If the duct comes in to your particular room, it's noisy and hot. If it doesn't come into your particular room, then it's cold but still noisy.
Now, do you know the circumstances in which these people found themselves moved to Athlone? Was there a sudden sharp shock to the system? Was there a lack of planning? What do you put it down to?
I don't want to start attaching blame to people because the situation, unless you want to blame Vladimir Putin and his adventures in Ukraine. But the story is that, for example, now back in 2019, nationally, there was 2,200 or so applicants for international protection. That was pre-COVID in the last sort of reasonably comparable year. After that, then in 2022, we've had 6,400, nearly 6,500 applicants so far, international protection applicants. Yeah. Add that in to the situation of having something like 55,000 Ukrainians seeking accommodation, and then you have a really massive crisis for the agency of the Department of Children that is actually supplying the accommodation, and that is, this agency is called IPAS, International Protection Accommodation Service. So quite seriously, there is not a bed to be had in the country. And things got particularly critical towards late summer and into the autumn. And you had accommodation and people sleeping on floors, people being told that they weren't in accommodation, that they weren't being supplied with accommodation at all. So the situation is that from a purely local point of view, New Horizon was dealing with about 300 international protection applicants this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
At this time now, if you the number of forcibly displaced people in the Athlone area is greater than 1,400.
Okay, so it has increased nearly fivefold in a year.
Yes. That is, of course, including including all international protection applicants and including the people who are here under the Temporary Protection Directive.
Well, okay, so perhaps a degree of sympathy for the officials in the department who have to try and find accommodation when none exists. The tents, however, given the season that we're in, is there a better way that hasn't been considered?
The situation was that the tents, it was really emergency time. It was either put people into the tents or leave them on the side of the road. And they were bad and all as they are, they're better than being on the side of the road.
What about sanitation? Have the facilities, are they in dry conditions? Sorry, the questions just keep coming because the spectre of being in a tent at this time of year poses so many challenges.
Yeah, yes. The situation is, There is a toilet block with toilets and showers, but it's a distance of maybe 30 metres away from the sleeping tents. And if you have to use the facilities in the middle of the night, you're quite liable to get very wet and very, very mucky, which means that you don't sleep for the rest of the night. And tents themselves are exceptionally noisy because they keep flapping in the wind. So a cold, still night is actually a little more, a bit more preferable than a warm, windy night.
All right. In the interest of fairness, the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, has said Ireland will stop using tents to house refugees. He says Ireland needs to change our infrastructure from one that's undertaking a short, kind of immediate term response, as it is right now, to one that's able to address this into the future. Do you accept on face value that the political will is there to change this?
I do accept that Roderick O'Gorman and his department are doing their best in very difficult circumstances. And I'm pleased to report that the transfer of people from the Athlone site, from the tents in Athlone to other accommodation, has started. So we now have about 40 people have been transferred from the tents, which leaves us with about 100 at the moment remaining.
Gerry, is there anything you and your team need from the local community, whether in the form of volunteers or materials?
We are, as always, desperate for volunteers. The situation is that we have, also pleased to report that we have been funded to have our first full-time worker, which hopefully we will get started and running in December. We could do with volunteers, we can do with people, we could do with people with arts backgrounds, with English language teachers, a variety of skills. Really and truly, it doesn't really matter what sort of physical skills, it doesn't really matter terribly much about language skills. As I always say, if you're what we call in rural Ireland a sound person, it doesn't matter what qualifications you can have.
Well, Gerry, we've your contact details here. We'll pass them on to anybody who is interested in lending a hand. Thank you very much for taking our call.
Thank you for calling. And let's hope that we continue to improve things.
Thank you indeed. Gerry Callaghan is chair of New Horizon, which is a group working in the Athlone area. Still to come today, what exactly did Leo Varadkar say about arming the Gardaí, and do you agree with him? Also, two Offaly men opened their second bar, in New York this week. Huge venture, big undertaking. And a little bit later, one in five low-paid workers is aged 50 and over. So why does somebody end up with those sort of prospects over the age of 50? Or is it by choice? We'll look into the circumstances very soon. On the subject of people impersonating the Gardaí, the Laois Offaly Division has issued the following warning, and it wants you to have a conversation with family, friends and neighbours, particularly if they may be more vulnerable. The Gardaí are aware, they say, of an increase in incidents of people impersonating Gardaí. This behaviour involves conmen requesting to check cash held by an injured party as a result of a counterfeit cash circulating in the area. The conmen have suggested they need to check the security of your house due to an increase in burglaries in the area. Again, you're assuming it's a Gardaí, they present at your door, they look very legitimate. But the Gardaí say in this statement, they will not cold call to a house. They will not request to see cash. They will not ask to inspect the security of your house. And you are reminded that any Gardaí who should call to your door will have identification. So if you have concerns, then call the Gardaí, the real Gardaí, on the local numbers or indeed on the 999 line, and do not answer the door, even if the person purports to be a Gardaí. Genuine Gardaí, they say, will always provide details allowing you to confirm their identity with the local station. A genuine Gardaí will be patient with you while you make that call. So beware. That's the best you can do. Be as vigilant as you can. Now, with the winter closing in, over 140 people are living in tents in the Athlone area. The Department of Equality and Integration has confirmed in a statement 146 residents of the Lissy Woolen Direct Provision Centre remain in tented accommodation. 20 international protection applicants who had been residing there have been moved to alternative accommodation. Now, let's find out more of the circumstances of this. Gerry Callaghan is the chair of New Horizon, which is an organisation that has, he says, a long and good relationship with staff and residents in Athlone. Gerry, thank you for taking our call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us, first of all, a little bit more about New Horizon. What do you do?
We're a frontline refugee support organisation which has been, for over 20 years, been helping people who are in the direct provision system in Ireland with information, social activities, sporting activities and many other things.
And over the two decades you've been involved, have you seen people placed in tented accommodation before?
No, this is the first time ever.
And when did it happen?
We found out that it was going to happen in early September. The tented accommodation was erected towards late September and the people moved in at that stage.
Can you describe it for us? Are we talking in small individual tents or larger, almost marquee size units?
They're larger marquee size units, and there are three large sleeping areas which are divided into about four person rooms with canvas divides between them, the rooms.
Okay, now I'm mindful last night it was 4 or 5 degrees in many parts of the Midlands. What sort of heat retention would these facilities have?
Very, very little heat retention. They heat up very, very quickly. They cool down even more quickly. The heating is by means of oil-fired burners which are mounted outside, and the hot air is then ducted in to the tents. If the duct comes in to your particular room, it's noisy and hot. If it doesn't come into your particular room, then it's cold but still noisy.
Now, do you know the circumstances in which these people found themselves moved to Athlone? Was there a sudden sharp shock to the system? Was there a lack of planning? What do you put it down to?
I don't want to start attaching blame to people because the situation, unless you want to blame Vladimir Putin and his adventures in Ukraine. But the story is that, for example, now back in 2019, nationally, there was 2,200 or so applicants for international protection. That was pre-COVID in the last sort of reasonably comparable year. After that, then in 2022, we've had 6,400, nearly 6,500 applicants so far, international protection applicants. Yeah. Add that in to the situation of having something like 55,000 Ukrainians seeking accommodation, and then you have a really massive crisis for the agency of the Department of Children that is actually supplying the accommodation, and that is, this agency is called IPAS, International Protection Accommodation Service. So quite seriously, there is not a bed to be had in the country. And things got particularly critical towards late summer and into the autumn. And you had accommodation and people sleeping on floors, people being told that they weren't in accommodation, that they weren't being supplied with accommodation at all. So the situation is that from a purely local point of view, New Horizon was dealing with about 300 international protection applicants this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
At this time now, the number of forcibly displaced people in the Athlone area is greater than 1,400.
Okay, so it has increased nearly fivefold in a year.
Yes. That is, of course, including including all international protection applicants and including the people who are here under the Temporary Protection Directive.
Well, okay, so perhaps a degree of sympathy for the officials in the department who have to try and find accommodation when none exists. The tents, however, given the season that we're in, is there a better way that hasn't been considered?
The situation was that the tents, it was really emergency time. It was either put people into the tents or leave them on the side of the road. And they were bad and all as they are, they're better than being on the side of the road.
What about sanitation? Have the facilities, are they in dry conditions? Sorry, the questions just keep coming because the spectre of being in a tent at this time of year poses so many challenges.
Yes. The situation is there is a toilet block with toilets and showers, but it's a distance of maybe 30 metres away from the sleeping tents. And if you have to use the facilities in the middle of the night, you're quite liable to get very wet and very, very mucky, which means that you don't sleep for the rest of the night. And the tents themselves are exceptionally noisy because they keep flapping in the wind. So a cold, still night is actually a little more, a bit more preferable than a warm, windy night.
Well, in the interest of fairness, the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, has said Ireland will stop using tents to house refugees. He says Ireland needs to change our infrastructure from one that's undertaking a short, kind of immediate term response, as it is right now, to one that's able to address this into the future. Do you accept on face value that the political will is there to change this?
I do accept that Roderick O'Gorman and his department are doing their best in very difficult circumstances. And I'm pleased to report that the transfer of people from the Athlone site, from the tents in Athlone to other accommodation has started. So we now have about 40 people have been transferred from the tents, which leaves us with about 100 at the moment remaining.
Gerry, is there anything you and your team need from the local community, whether in the form of volunteers or materials?
We are, as always, desperate for volunteers. The situation is that we have also pleased to report that we have been funded to have our first full-time worker, which hopefully we will get started and running in December. We could do with volunteers, we can do with people, we could do with people with arts backgrounds, with English language teachers, a variety of skills. Really and truly, it doesn't really matter what sort of physical skills, it doesn't really matter terribly much about language skills. As I always say, if you're what we call in rural Ireland a sound person, it doesn't matter what qualifications you can have.
Well, Gerry, we've your contact details here. We'll pass them on to anybody who is interested in lending a hand. Thank you very much for taking our call.
Thank you for calling. And let's hope that we continue to improve things.
Thank you indeed. Gerry Callaghan is chair of New Horizon, which is a group working in the Athlone area. Still to come today, what exactly did Leo Varadkar say about arming the Gardaí, and do you agree with him? Also, two Offaly men opened their second bar, their second in New York this week. Huge venture, big undertaking. And a little bit later, one in five low-paid workers is aged 50 and over. So why does somebody end up with those sort of prospects over the age of 50? Or is it by choice? We'll look into the circumstances very soon. Well, there are very long traffic delays at the Water Tower in Tullamore due to roadworks. So anybody travelling in that direction, allow half an hour extra for your journey. Goodness, that's a huge delay. If you encounter anything on the roads of the Midlands that other motorists should be aware of, please text, when safe to do so, on 083 30 10 103. And with the weather getting colder and with family Christmas visits about to happen, our friends at Class Oil are on hand to keep you warm this winter, delivering oil throughout the greater Midlands area every day and keeping your car fuelled with their pumps located at Flynn Fuels in Athlone. So to help kick off the festive season, our friends at Class Oil want you to win €100 either for heating or at the pumps. And all you have to do is head to the Midlands 103 Facebook page right now and simply say Class Oil in the dedicated post. The very best of luck to you. And you can check out more, by the way, at Class Oil. That's class with a K dot I-E. Latest news on the way at 10 o'clock, after which Leo Varadkar's comments about arming the Gardaí. Is it something you would support? Oh, indeed, the festive feeling is here. Well, a little later, we catch up on the World Cup. Germany still in it. A close contest with Spain. Poland having a very good tournament. Robert Lewandowski getting his first goal in a World Cup. So who's your favourite to win? Brazil, if you ask the bookies. Brazil still very much the bookies' favourite. But is there a dark horse that you can point to? Well, 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Naturally, we'll catch you up as well on all of the local fixtures. And one in five low-paid workers in Ireland is over the age of 50. We'll tell you what else this study says in half an hour. Leo Varadkar has reignited the debate about arming the Gardaí. When he was interviewed over the weekend, he said, if the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, wished to make such a move, he would not block it. However, his government partners, both Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Green Party leader Éamon Ryan, are distancing themselves from those comments. The spokesperson for the Taoiseach said the government is committed to the ongoing reform of policing, such as the Commission on the Future of Policing, which did not recommend arming the Gardaí. Mr. Ryan's spokesperson said he is conscious the founding principle of the force is that it will not succeed by force of arms or numbers, but on the moral authority as servants of the people. Conor Staunton represents Gorthy in County Westmeath through the GRA. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
This is more a hypothetical discussion rather than any firm policy being announced, but maybe you could fill us in on the training, if any, that you and anybody else graduating from Temple Moor would have when it comes to firearms.
Well, I suppose we wouldn't have any training, or anyone that goes through Temple Moor wouldn't get automatically get training in firearms. That's done if you move into those sections that a firearm is used, detective armed response units, you would complete training, pretty intensive training in firearms if you go into them units. But as a standard, the normal guard that's on the beat and serving in towns across the country, they wouldn't have firearms training at all.
Right, so that would be a huge gap in learning that would have to be addressed if this policy was to become a reality. You'd have to be trained, and presumably not just on how to use the weapon, but when not to use it as well.
Absolutely, Will, yeah. It would be, look, I'm not sure it's something that's going to happen anytime soon, but it would be a big issue to get people trained. But I don't think that would be the main talking point of that. So I suppose from a GRA point of view, it's not something that we would support at any stage. You know, since the foundation of An Garda Síochána 100 years ago, we've policed by consent, and we'd like to see that continue.
And given that we now have, unfortunately, very well-armed criminal gangs, there's always been that subversive element as well, perhaps not as much as during the Troubles, but it's still there. Is there any part of you that wonders, would you be safer if you were armed?
Yeah, I don't think so, Will, to be honest with you. I'm over 20 years in policing, and it can be dangerous at times, but I think the real focus should be on the availability of armed support rather than arming every guard that's out there. I think the majority of people in this country are law-abiding citizens, and that's the experience we have when we're dealing with people day-to-day. So I think the availability of armed support and the bumping up of those units so that they're available, you know, and can get to you in good time, I think that should be more the focus than what has been said by the punished in recent days. I think it's maybe a bit of a deflection from the real issues that we're facing at the moment in policing.
And heaven forbid now there was an incident in Moat and you felt you needed some armed backup. Is there a criteria that must be met for calling them in? How does it work?
Well, it's usually assessed by our control rooms, whether, you know, whether armed support is needed. And like more often than not, if it's any sort of situation like that at all, they will call in for armed support. The length of time that might take is probably the issue. If they're in some other part of the country, they are a regional resource, the armed support unit. So, you know, while in Dublin, while it may be busier and you might have more incidents, the availability of armed support would probably be, you know, a little bit more easier to get. Whereas if you're out in a country area, having armed support close by is probably an issue, you know what I mean? Mm. And you could be waiting some time. Not always, but you can be waiting some time. So
And armed support travels by road rather than using the helicopter, generally speaking?
Oh, by road, Will, yeah. They travel by road. So if they're in, they could be in any part of the region, the eastern region, that's, say, for the likes of Westmeath are in. So they could be in Kildare, they could be in Wicklow, they could be anywhere. So I suppose we'd be calling, and we have called for before, that every division would have a constant armed support unit available, so that at least if they're in the Westmeath area, you know that it's going to be there within minutes.
Hmm. Are those positions on the armed support unit coveted? Are they desired?
There would be, Will, yeah. There would be a good interest in those sorts of positions, but I suppose, again, it comes down to money, training, availability of staff. So, I mean, to fill those positions, they have to come from somewhere, and they would have to come from regular units. And as you'd be aware, we're already pretty depleted at the minute. So, I mean, that's another issue that we have then as well. So you're obviously not going to come straight out of Temple Moor into those positions. So to be coming from, you know, people on regular units and stuff like that. So if you take from one to go to another, it's depleting one, you know, so it's kind of a knock-on effect. So I suppose that comes back to the recruitment and the issues that we have there and retention of Gardaí as well, you know. So, I mean, it's all knock-on, I'm afraid. But I suppose that's where the concentration should be really on, rather than a talk of arming Gardaí. It should be on our recruitment policy, getting the right people, retention of people, and stuff that we can actually do now in the short term, body cams, tasers, stuff like that. That's where the attention should be, and not on the likes of Armin Gardaí.
And just finally, why would those positions be so desired? Is it because they carry better terms? Is it because they bear arms? Is it the nature of the work? I mean, surely that's quite daunting, actually, the nature of the work they do. So what would be the lure?
Not entirely sure, to be honest with you. It's probably not something I personally would want to go into, but there does seem to be a will, or there does seem to be a good interest in that type of work. And I'm not sure what the draw is, but I know that there is a good interest in it, and just some people are set that way, and you know, it's something different, I suppose, for some people as well, you know. So I'm not entirely sure what the lure is, but there definitely is a big interest in it.
Okay, let me put some listener comments. Hilda says arming the Gardaí would lead to a spiralling. It wouldn't give the Gardaí an advantage. It would simply mean the criminals become better armed. Another caller, though, says we are in an era of no respect. So how then are we to address the number of assaults on the Gardaí? Surely members, if they were better protected, would be less of a target. Have you a stance on that?
Yeah, well, I don't think a firearm is going to change that, Will, and I think there are ways of combating that, and that doesn't mean that you're carrying a gun on your hip. I mean, like, it's very hard to address the thing about no respect, and I suppose we would, look, I said it before, the majority of people in this country, we get on with, they have respect for us. There is a small minority, it seems to be growing, but, you know, the likes of non-lethal tasers, body cams, like a body cam is probably not going to stop you getting assaulted or anything like that, but a body cam will show to a judge down the road what exactly took place, because it's like a video tells everything, whereas if you're giving evidence of what happened, it doesn't probably tell the full picture, but a body cam will. So it's little things like that that might make people think, you know, before they do anything. I don't think a firearm is the answer. You know, I don't think it's going to address that. And I think, personally speaking, I wouldn't want to have a firearm on my hip when dealing with any of those incidents. Mm.
Former Garda has called us to say pulling a trigger is a big responsibility, and it is something you will remember for the rest of your life. It is not a burden most Gardaí would wish to take on. Another person asks, what tactical advantage would an unarmed Garda have over an armed assailant? None. Whereas a gun in the hand of a trained Garda would be worth 10 times the intimidation factor. A few people have pointed out there have been tragic incidents where a gun loses a gun, and then it can be turned against them to deadly force. So, anyway, I think the consensus from people listening is that it's very much a case of keeping the Gardaí unarmed, bar for those select specialist units that you've described. But a few people have asked, how many of them are there? You mentioned there's one in each region. So how many is that?
I don't have the number on it. Now, there was an increase over the last number of years, but I suppose we would be saying that we could do it more. It's they are covering a large area, and like that, if there's an operation or something happens in one part of the region, the potential is there that there's none available to you if something happens in your area. So we had called for before that every division should have an armed response unit. And that would mean for Westmead that there's one on patrol around the whole Westmead area. It just reduces the amount of time it takes for them to get to you.
All right, Conor Staunton, appreciate your time. Thank you for taking the call.
Thanks, Will.
Conor Staunton is the Westmeath representative for the GRA. Will, arming the Gorthy is arming the criminal, says a caller. Another listener, Joe, suggests we have three armed units in Ireland, two in the police force and then one in the army. Surely that is enough. As regards arming the Gorthy, most definitely not, given some of the controversies and corruptions we have heard about over the years, says a caller. Kieran and Kiki Cabs favours arming the Gorthy and says the sooner the better. And Mark goes on to say, I think the situation is that Gorthy don't trust themselves with firearms, as well as the cost of the firearms and the cost of the training coming out of the Gartha budget. Those are the real reasons they're not arming. What would have happened to Gorthy at the Regency Hotel had they been armed on site? Brian in Portlaoise says we cannot recruit enough Gorthy, cannot keep the ones who are in the force. Management is incapable of providing advanced driver training to only a few. Yet a politician thinks firearms training will be magically available to all. Christmas kicks off in Mullingar this coming Friday, and the Christmas lights will be officially turned on by the 2022 Rose of Tralee, Rachel Duffy. And Midlands 103 is very much looking forward to being there at Market Square from 4:30 until 6:30 with music and activities for the kids and lots of special guests on the way. And the big Christmas switch on is with thanks to Belvedere House Gardens and Park in Mullingar, where you can visit Santa in his festive lit boathouse, no less. Belvedere-house.ie for more details. A little bit earlier, we heard of the 100 people who are now in tented accommodation in Lissy-Wullen, such as the spike in demand for accommodation through the direct provision system. Well, let's look more widely. And given that we have a Housing for All plan that is now 2.5 years in gestation, surely the number of homeless people around the Midlands is coming down. Well, let's see what the Simon community has discovered. Mark Cooney is chairperson of Midland Simon. Mark, good morning.
Morning, Will.
What do your latest figures say?
We say there are more. It's increasing. We haven't seen any decrease. And the problem still exists. Yes, the housing programme is happening, but we all know it's catch-up and it hasn't filtered through. We still have the same difficulties that the people who are in our emergency accommodation are remaining there for much longer than they should be because of the lack of housing that's available.
Well, while we're talking emergency accommodation, in the month of October, 128 people accessed it, 56 of those in Westmeath, which is the largest of the Midland counties. But maybe put some colour on that for us, Mark. What sort of stories would these people have?
Well, the stories we're finding, well, I suppose in 2021, we had a 21%, 28% increase in the number of people that we were supporting, which is indicative that the numbers are increasing. Our outreach team contact over 30 people every quarter who are sleeping rough. These are people who are out sleeping rough, and we're giving out 50 tents, 50 sleeping bags each quarter. So that is an increase. That's something that wasn't there 3 years ago.
I'm aware of local authorities giving vouchers for B&Bs to try and help people who are in a bind. If you happen to get those vouchers, will you find a B&B that has accommodation available and will accept them?
That can be difficult. That's our out of hour service uses that facility. Sometimes there are places it hasn't. That's not a major problem, but it's very much a short term solution. And I suppose we don't have. These are people who ordinarily should be moving into our emergency accommodation, staying there for a period of time until they get sorted and can find a place of their own. That's not happening because the places in our emergency accommodation services in Athlone and Tullamore are remaining there. There are no vacancies and because they can't move on to other houses, and that's the ongoing issue. And the other problem that we're having is that the people who are in our emergency services, 90% of them either have addiction or mental health support need or a combination of both, and that's becoming very difficult and putting huge strain on resources as well.
And are you able to get some acute hospital care for these people?
That could be a conversation for a whole programme, I think, Will. We have difficulties getting the appropriate services with the mental health HSE services that exist in the Midlands. I think that's a problem a lot of people have experienced. So we're dealing with them. We have people who give of their own time, professionals who assist us, because the system, unfortunately, is letting a lot of these people down.
All right, well, let's perhaps cast our minds back to when we had something of a normal housing market. How long would a person typically have been in emergency accommodation before moving on to a more permanent solution?
So average 3 months, might go up to 6 months. Now we're 12 months plus. We have one service user who's been with us for, I think, in excess of 2 years. Now, this is somebody who is extremely complex. Needs really in the ordinary way the HSE mental health services should be looking after that person. So, but we're talking about 6 to 12 months and longer, where previously it had been 3 to 6 and people could move on when there was housing available.
Now, part of the great work that you and your team do is that you try to give these people assistance in normalising their lives, whether it's getting back used to the routine of getting up in the morning, having a house and a roof over your head and being able to sustain that. So is the extra time of any benefit?
Well, not really, because ideally these people, the emergency accommodation is that. It's emergency, it's temporary. They move on, we found places for these people to move on to, and then we have the support team who work with those service users who move into their own apartment or house and ensure that they can keep it by calling on a regular basis, making sure they're keeping their bills up to date, they're paying their rent, keeping the house, and gradually easing off once they've settled in, to ensure they don't just go into a house and then flounder, end up not paying rent or not paying services, utilities are being put out. So that service, we have that and that's there, but the problem is finding a place for people to move into.
Well, if that's the logjam, the solution presumably is on the supply side. Is there anything that hasn't been discussed or considered in terms of ideas that you would like the government to consider?
Well, it's about housing and affordable housing. And obviously you prefaced your remarks with the refugee issue, and that clearly is a problem. Obviously we have to look after these people who are coming in. There's no question about that, but it's putting further pressure on what might be available out there and indeed the resources that are available. It's more accommodation. We're finding it. We're bringing Midland Simon in conjunction with Sophia, have projects ongoing. They're at a stage in Portlaoise. Construction is going to start soon. Port Arlington's a little while behind. These will all feed into the market and provide accommodation and apartments for people to move on to. But again, no more than everything else that's happening in the private sector, it's going to be another 6-12 months before they come on stream, and we're just going to have that problem continue in the meantime.
Well, I hope our next conversation is more positive. Mark Cooney, thank you very much for your time.
So, Will. Thank you indeed. Bye.
Mark Cooney is chairperson of Midlands Simon. Now, still on the agenda, and indeed